they changed the law to say you were only free based on what your mother was, because these men want to have sex with these black enslaved women, and they didn't want their kids to be free. Y'all was just out here just changing it to work for you.
Welcome to the AI Decodes the System podcast. I'm your host, Amber Ivy, also known as AI. AI Decodes the System is a series of podcast interviews with industry experts and everyday people who will help explain topics related to policy, tech, data, law, and other current issues in plain language. The goal of this podcast is to help close the knowledge gap in a world that's moving fast and inundated with a lot of information. So sit back, grab your notebook, and enjoy the show.
Today, as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we're going to take a deeper look at how technology is changing the way we think about justice and how we can use it to create a more equitable society. The advancements in technology have brought about new challenges and opportunities for realizing Dr. King's vision of a just and equal society. Join us as we discuss the role of technology in shaping public policy and the law, and how data can be used to understand and address issues of inequality and injustice. This week's episode is a little bit different because I'm hosting a replay from a podcast I actually had on the Conversate with Akeem show a couple weeks ago. In this podcast, we really dig in deep to the intersections of technology, public policy, law, and data, and why I think it's important for all of us to understand how the future of technology is going to be pivotal in a lot of our roles, no matter if it's law or another topic. That's why I really talk about these subjects so that we're all up to date on them. But either way, sit back and enjoy the show. You're going to see me live and live in color on this one because this is one of my good friends from law school. So I hope you enjoy it. Please rate the show. Please subscribe. And always feel free to donate to our Patreon. Talk to you soon.
Welcome to another episode of Conversate with Akeem D. Earl. I'm here with another very special guest. This guest is a prominent thinker, voice, and leader of cultural change. She's an expert in data utilization and management, while also being an equitable leader. She was born in Bethesda, Maryland. She earned an undergraduate degree from Old Dominion University, a graduate degree from the University of Maryland, College Park, and a law degree from the University of the District of Columbia, David A. Clark School of Law. Shout out to UDC. In 2020, Amber Ivy ran for election to the U.S. House to represent Maryland's 7th Congressional District. While in law school, Amber realized she wanted to support people in a different way and decided to serve in the intersection of data, tech, law, and public policy. She now serves as a vice president for a nonprofit organization focused on social impact. She is also the founder of Ivy Collective, which is a consulting agency that provides action plans to businesses and government agencies through data audits, and is a fellow podcast host of the AI Decodes the System podcast, which breaks down topics related to data, tech, law, and public policy in plain language. I know her because she was my class mentor. Our school had this thing called class mentors for our class, and she was a 3-0 going out, and I was a 1-0 coming in.
4-0. I was under.
4-0. Oh, yeah. Evening student. Dang, gang. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Evening. Yeah, that's why. Right. So definitely evening student. We was in the trenches for 4 years doing this thing, and she was an extreme help, a wonderful mentor, and I was excited to see her process and her journey throughout the years. I was able to help her on her campaign when she was running for the U.S. House of Representatives, and we was in the trenches in Baltimore getting these signatures.
Hot.
And we gonna get mad. Those people was mad. Walk up to them with signature. Like, man, if y'all get up my face. It was a lot, but it was a great experience. And we gonna get into that too.
Okay.
So cool. I'm excited to have Miss Amber Ivy on the podcast. Welcome, Amber.
Glad to be here. I do my own air horn. Boop, 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 boop. Glad to be here.
Big it up. I got to get that for the guests. I'm going to get the air horn.
Yeah, you got to bring that in.
Dope. How are you doing, Amber?
I am lovely. It's been a great day. I will not complain. Of course, everyone could complain about something, but I choose not to complain. So I'm feeling
awesome. Good. So we usually start this podcast with a finish this sentence, right? Mm-hmm. And it is, if I was not a lawyer, I would be a what? And you are a different case because you are living in what you would not be. So speak a little bit about like why can't you answer that question?
So I decided not to practice as an attorney. So I am trained as a lawyer. When I went to school, I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to be in the trenches. I want to help people. I want to figure that out. But then I remember being at the cover retreat. They would send all these law students who were interested in public interest from the Yales of the world and other schools. And for us, like, UDC is not ranked up there with the Yales, but we are top when it comes to public interest. So I remember going to the cover retreat out in the middle of nowhere, Vermont, like legit, or New Hampshire. I don't even know what state I was in. That's how bad it was. And we were out there in cabins and literally with a whole bunch of other folks who were interested in this. And at the time, I was working in data and working at the Pew Charitable Trust on a data project doing research and data because that's my natural background. And I remember sitting down at the table with this girl during lunch. And because I was an evening student, I had a full-time job. So I was doing law school at the same time. And she literally was like, why are you here? She was like, what you do sounds interesting. Why are you here? And I was like,
wow,
you know, why am I here? And that was like my cool L year. And then the crazy part is that following Monday, I had an event at work where we brought in a whole bunch of people to talk about data, predictive analytics, and all this stuff. And a guy literally stood up in front of the room and said, if you find your intersection, or if you're sitting in the intersection of data, technology, law, and policy, you have found your niche. And I'm like,
wow,
that's me. And I like, in that moment, I'm like, that's the space I'm going to live in. That's a space that is necessary for progress with how the world is changing with technology.
Yeah.
The reality is lawyers do not learn about tech. Like, we went through law school and there was no tech classes. There are now tech companies that are writing contracts for us. There are literally tech companies that are doing way more in law than we ever thought was possible. And we as lawyers are not learning that. Same thing with tech companies. They're not trained on the law. So they're going to mess up and do things that they're not supposed to. Same thing with public policy. They're not trained on law or tech. And so all these things, I was realizing there's all these silos, but I've been blessed just in my career to be in all those worlds where I have a unique position to see the center of that, to help people not have to deal with bias and like data collection or other things related to the intersection of the world. So I found my niche and my intersection. So that's why I do not practice as a lawyer. And what I do is lawyer adjacent. And it's very important to make sure that I'm on the preventative side of what could happen with some of these technologies, public policy, et cetera.
Got you. That's dope. So why did you decide to go into law school in the first place? If you,
I thought I wanted to like go out there, make the world a better place. And I thought I could do it through law. And I knew that.
Got you.
I knew that I've always wanted to be a lawyer since I was a kid. Everyone said I was going to be a lawyer. I always wanted to be a lawyer. Honestly, also at the cover retreat, I remember being in the room with one of the women who filmed in the movie, what's it called? The 13th Amendment, or is it called?
Yeah.
One of the women.
On Netflix,
Yeah, she filmed in that movie. And one of the things she said to me, actually, and it's probably going to sound bad to your audience, but I'm going to say it. She said to me, I can only afford, she's a lawyer from Harvard. I can only afford to do things when someone gives me a contract, because the clients I serve are in poverty, and therefore she's also in poverty. And I sat there and I was like, what? Like, that blew me away. This Harvard trained lawyer is serving a population that she now also becomes a part of, and it can only feels like she can only travel when, or live her life when, other folks ask her to come and do something or speak somewhere. And I'm like, that can't be the way to help people who are in poverty. And the sad part is public defenders don't make a lot of money, and they don't like, they don't, they struggle a lot. They can't pay back those loans, especially if you went to a top university for your law degree, and not like a UDC was very reasonably priced. And we were all able to like, it was much better than going to a six figure law school. So it
you didn't have the parents to like back you up.
Yeah. If you don't have the, if you're trying to like help make people be better, you shouldn't have to go into debt that much, and then you come out and you can't even replace your salary. So even
so you
want
to be a defense attorney. Defense attorney was
I wanted to do. And I was like, this isn't gonna, I said, I can't help people if I'm literally in the same situation. So I was like, what is another
we all
way?
Struggling
That's what I'm saying. And then it was like, one for one, what's the other issue? I think that people need to do that. There are people who need to be one for one, being out there, being a defense attorney, making sure people are okay. But I was like, I had another skill where I'm like, I can hit more than the one. I can hit the many with what's coming ahead. And plus, I had been in an industry where I'm seeing the future. And I'm like, if they think they're struggling in the defense system now with the number of people we have in the system, imagine when computers and technology are involved in this. It's only going to increase that even more. So I wanted to be on the preventive side of what's happening and what's coming down the pipeline. things with bias and AI face recognition, like all this stuff is coming. So I'm like, I can help way more on this end just knowing what I have in my background.
Right. So get into it. Like, how would technology impact negatively on
so many of ways? Well, you all have heard things like, one, dark skin does not photograph well, period. It just doesn't. We can go back into the history of Kodak original cards and how the different how photography was trained and built. We can go back that far. Like, it was trained on a white woman. It was built that way. But still, dark skin does not absorb light in that way, right? So if you do have things like AI face recognition, it's very hard to differentiate faces that are black because we don't have enough training data. So in order to train the AI to understand something, there has to be a lot of data that goes into that. If we don't have that, it can get features mixed up. So often black people are confused for each other because there's not enough data to be able to differentiate between Akeem right here and then maybe Joseph over here.
So they think we all look the same in real life and in AI, basically.
Because if you don't have enough data feeding it, the computer's only going to do what humans tell it to do. Like, it's not going to do anything else. And then other areas that we've seen, I know it's wild. Other areas that we've seen, even with just data in general, is like Stop and Frisk in New York. Stop and Frisk in New York started with something called CompStat back in the day. It started with CompStat, or it was a stat program. I also worked for a stat program in Maryland back in the day as well. But they did this thing called cops on dots. So put cops where the crime is, and that's where you hang out. It helped reduce crime and was supposed to stop crime. But if you take that to the next level of only going where you're policing, if you police in one neighborhood and don't police in the next neighborhood, you're going to find more crime in the neighborhood you police in. They've done studies that show everybody smoke weed at the same rate, period. I don't know if I can say weed on your show. They do. They stop people randomly. They smoke weed at the same rate. But if you're targeting this district and this other district is not being targeted, when you feed that data into the system, it's going to then tell you to go to the black neighborhood. Like, it's just going to actually tell you that because that's the data you gave it. So it's so many things that are happening on that side of things that I'm like, this is good. Like, this is like on 1,000. Like, what we're dealing with is already bad. This is going to make it even worse.
Right. And I just feel like, like you said, the law is just so slow with the technology. Even the tech we use.
No, they're slow, and then there's law. The joke is that I also worked on a law tech project. No, it's bad. There was a law tech project, and one of the things I would say in front of the judges when I worked with them, because I was helping them improve their systems, particularly in the civil legal system is where I was working. And I would literally tell them, if you go into a courtroom in the 17th century, it will look the same as it does today.
I have no doubt about that.
There's no other part of the world that's acceptable. It's not. What other industry would you be okay with that?
I've been in trials with like people.
Common law, England.
Yes.
And everything is the same, and which is fine.
Extremely old.
But at some point, court should not be 8 to 5 when people have to be at work. Like, never mind. It's a whole other issue. I'm going to calm down. What's your next question?
This is why you're here. We're going to get into it.
That is a problem. The courts have not caught up. There are a few law schools that are stepping up. There's Suffolk Law, there's Stanford. Mm-hmm. A few are now creating law tech programs because they realize they're so far behind. And now they're actually requiring, even some of the professional responsibility, they're having to change people are talking about changing some of those rules to make sure you stay up on tech. Because if you're defending someone and don't know what the hell is going on, you're not doing what you're supposed to do as a lawyer.
Yeah. If you're dealing with cases that involve cell phones or different things like that, you need to know.
Oh, a lot of different stuff. Courts don't even allow cell phones in some courts. Houseway.
Yeah. Right. I've been a paralegal for 5 years, and I've worked with a lot of different attorneys. Mm-hmm. And some of them are just so stuck in their ways. They don't want to update no system. They don't want to use no new technology. The simple filing systems, they're like, I don't want to do it. And it's like, bro, like, it's 2022. That's why
they chose, because they don't want to do math.
Man.
Anything related to tech.
And which is why law schools and firms struggled during the pandemic, because they had to use tech. And it was terrible. People were going crazy. And we had to take classes in law school during the pandemic. And it was like, it was a whole shift in how we did law school. It was definitely a struggle for real. So, okay, let's take it back.
Let me say one thing before you move on. The crazy part of that is I was working with a court before, actually a few courts before the pandemic. We were putting court online. So the courts I work with and got their systems up were able to run court online during a pandemic because we were able to get it up before then. So that helped them to literally deal with traffic cases, some divorce cases and family law cases and other cases that come through a civil legal system in a very easy way. And before court in many situations, like, how can we settle this before we even get there? And it was all done on an app or on a website.
Right.
Because you don't need to be in court to handle 99% of the stuff in the civil legal system. But anyways.
We gonna see if we ever get to that point. But so let's take it back.
They're trying. Sorry, go ahead.
Why data? It seems like when you hear data, you hear numbers and you get very bogged down. Like, okay, I don't want to deal with no numbers. It sounds boring. Why did you choose data? What's exciting about data to you?
I like math, but to me, data isn't math, if that makes sense. So to me, data is people. Especially in a world where I've been in for most of my career was in people, government, and things like that. So for me, data is telling me about the people I'm either serving or helping others serve and giving me more insight on them. That's the way I look at data. Because otherwise, if you think about it, it's all these numbers, that makes you, people get frustrated. People like don't want to talk about it. It's literally people. Like data in my field is people. Data may be numbers or other stuff related to that. But the end of that, that's a person behind that. So that's the way I look at it. I'm like, every single data point is a human being. I can learn about that human being. I can help that human being because I know what's going on in their life and because I can see what's happening. And I can provide an intervention based on what the numbers about that human being are saying. So that's why I like it. I'm also just an operations person and I need to be able to know that what I'm doing has a reason. I'm not the person that's going to do something off the cuff or because my heart feels a certain way. I'm like, no, what's the evidence we need to do
this? Calculated.
It's calculated. It's like I'm too logical. And I'm like, all right, 1 + 1 has to equal 2 for me. I can't do all the other stuff. I'm like, I'll allow probably 10% of that fray in my life. But for the most part, I need to know what we're going to do is helping and then be able to come back and say, hey, let me see if what I did didn't help. How can I improve? So that's just how I live.
Man. So do you ever feel like sometimes you can get too caught up in the data? Like, do you ever feel like the data loses the human aspect?
It does.
Of it sometimes?
I personally...
How do you handle that?
I think because I'm around the humans, right? So I stay connected to my community. I stay, if I'm working in an area, I make sure I'm volunteering. I make sure I'm being a part of human interaction that doesn't make me see data. Like, I can easily look at data because Baltimore collects a lot of data. They're one of the first cities to collect data and to do stat programs after New York. And they actually, when their program was like one of the top leading programs in the world at one point. But I can look at that data, but I also know when I walk down the street, I see the young kids I'm mentoring. I can be able to see the human side of it. So I think it's important for you to be able to not just sit on a computer and look at numbers, but also to be a part and work with that community for them to also tell you what's happening. Like data alone is not a thing. Like it has to be data plus people. Like I always tell people that.
Yeah.
And even data, you can change it to say what you wanted to say. So let's not lie about it. People manipulate it. People tell a different story based on what they see. A lot of times looking straight at a chart, it's not going to tell you what's happening in the community. A number could be going up and you're not going to find out until you actually get on the ground and go discover what it is. So I do encourage people to actually find out why the number is going up and not just assume the number is going up for a reason they think. And community communication or talk to the community can help with that a lot.
Got you. So if one extreme is just only looking at numbers, what's the other extreme, like on the opposite side of using data? What do people do instead of data?
Trust the people fully.
You're supposed to trust the people, right? What's wrong with that?
We are fickle. We're human. No, I'm just saying we make mistakes. It's easier to see patterns when you have like a method or a methodology for how you see it. You can then take that and say, I'm not going to trust this alone and take it to humans. Or the other way, a human says, I'm having this issue. The data also points to that issue. Like it helps you to be able to back things up. I believe things work together better. Like the whole silo thing doesn't work for me. I'm all about let us all pull together, pull people from different backgrounds who see things a different way together to solve problems. Not this whole idea of one way, this one way, that. Data is not the way to solve all the problems. It just gives you insight that you may not have had to know where to look, right? And then you go do the next step, go work with the community, go work with other stakeholders to figure out what it is and come up with a solution. Yeah. Data cannot do it all. Data does one small piece of it.
Got you. That makes sense. So speaking of being amongst the people, you decided to run for House Representative in 2020?
Yes.
Why did you make that decision?
Back to our conversation. So because I see, particularly in Congress and even in other places, they're not thinking about technology. I've said this then and I'll say it now. The fact that people did not know how Facebook worked, who are leading our laws, when Facebook literally owns society, owns
everything.
Culture. TikTok owns society, owns culture. Yeah. Instagram owns society, owns culture. They have billions of users. And the people who are making our laws had no idea what it was. That is a problem. And then now, like even now, if you look at all the stuff, they're like, tech is getting too big. It's going to keep getting too big because you don't understand what the hell is happening. And then the future of work, I was scared about the future of work. And I was like, people are not going to have be able to have jobs because our skills deficit. COVID hit. We just literally skipped into, we were predicting and other folks were predicting that we would have a problem between 2030 to 2040 was going to be a huge problem where we're going to have a knowledge deficit gap where there would be more jobs than people. Now COVID hit. We got it. It's here. We have more jobs than people with the skills. And sadly, all these, even though there are layoffs now, like forget the recession for a minute. That's only going to last for some time. Tech is still going to go up. But before, like last year and even beginning of this year, we had so many jobs that were open in the tech space or in these other industries that need these skill sets, zero skills. And then a lot of people decided they didn't want to work or didn't want to work low wage jobs during COVID. That actually sped up automation. If you look at what Walmart's doing, Walmart literally one location has full automation, full self-checkout. No humans are there other than like a couple people standing at the end.
Walmart need to get Apple Pay though. Walmart is bugging out. They don't got Apple Pay though.
They'll get that later. They don't care.
They played around. Walmart
without Apple Pay. And they also think about the consumer. But anyways, moving on. But they are like, private sector companies saw during COVID the importance of going online and being digital. We lost so many businesses in COVID. So many companies are bankrupt. We lost retail companies that will never come back are gone. The stuff we grew up with literally is gone that quick because of what was happening during that time. It sped us up. So also the private sector companies that knew, they immediately went to tech. A lot of them do not have to hire the same amount of people again. Yes, a lot of places are now asking for people to come back. But in the background, please believe those tech companies are automating and figuring out how to make sure they don't ever experience that again.
So there's a smoothie
spot. What is it? Jamba Juice has a completely automated smoothie location. There are no humans. Wow. I think one human comes to drop off like the ingredients probably a couple times a week. It automates everything. You order, the machine makes it and gives it to you. There are no humans at the location. If you don't think they're going to do more of that, they will, because they were they're not going to lose their company on the fact of individuals not coming or not wanting to work those jobs. And at the same time, those individuals don't have the skill sets, sadly, to get the jobs that are paying the livable wage due to policies and everything else. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Man, that's crazy. So you spoke about Congress not like catching up with the times. What could they have done? Like, say they were the most well-versed in tech.
How
could they have curved this?
They've known. There are literally senators in Congress who have been talking about these topics, specifically future of work, for a very long time and saying and ringing the alarm. Hey, y'all, there's a few. Shoot, you can check the legislation that never passed. There's a few future of work legislation that was like trying to get apprenticeships in place, more of those involved, fellowships, more jobs training and skills training back in school to fund a lot of that stuff. Like there's a lot of stuff we could do around helping folks get skills in the jobs of the future. And we're not. So it's like, if you're not paying attention to that, what else are you going to do? There are people who are ringing the alarm enough. Too many people are in there who have been in there too long. I believe in term limits. I've been in there too long who don't know the world we're in right now. And honestly, over the age of even as we were 30 some year olds, we're not the same people we were when we were 18 year olds. We were old to ourselves at 18. Think about,
what do you
I don't
mean
know
by
how
that?
You are. You maybe, are you 20 some or 30 something?
I'm 20 something.
Oh, okay. So you're still 20 something. As soon as you hit 30 something, you are now the old person you used to look at back in the day.
Right. I feel like that now though. It's crazy.
But that's what I'm saying. They want something different. So that group, Gen Z, lives online. My niece is 7. My niece, my other niece is 2. She lives, one lives on Roblox. One lives on YouTube. You can tell me every single YouTube star
Fortnite,
that exists.
All that.
All that. They live in a different Twitch. World. But the people who are making the rules for them are still in 1960 because that's when they got in office. Like, this is not an alignment.
Man, so what's best case scenario for the next 10 years? Or what's the worst case scenario?
I'm not saying that online. Leave it up to your imagination. I'm not answering that. I'm sorry.
Oh, Lord. You don't want to go missing like these NFT people.
A lot of people, I'll say this. I think a lot of people I talk to are nervous. Not just for this, not for technology, but it's a lot of things happening at once. A lot of systems in America are going through a pressure cooker to see if they're going to succeed or fail. And a lot of people are watching to see what happens. We're all hopeful for the best, but I am nervous about a lot of different systems ranging from housing, healthcare, education. Like, there's a lot of different things that over the next 10 years is going to be very interesting to watch. And I do not want to say anything else other than
that's scary.
No, don't let it
makes
be
me nervous.
Be hopeful in that we're going to figure it out. People are resilient. We're going to figure it out. But I am nervous.
Now we should trust in people.
I trust people always. Like, I don't want you to think that. I mean, like, don't fully say if someone says this is the problem, like, let's find something to back it up to enhance your voice, not like to do whatever. But that's what I mean.
Got you. I hear you. Okay. So let's switch gears. So when you decided to not practice law anymore, did you feel like there's like a death of a career of like a part of you like, oh man, I'm giving this thing up? Or you just, or it felt natural, like, okay, I'm fine with not practicing.
No, I was fine because I decided, I decided my 2L year that I was like, I'm going to serve in the intersection. I mean, I probably will in the future, like do something with law, like more so like back to once I feel like I've done all I can in this space, like go do stuff pro bono and stuff like that to help people out. But it was, I just needed to be on the other side. Like I just felt for myself, seeing what I see, knowing the world I live in, I'm like, it's not enough lawyers on this side of the world. Now, there can be lawyers based on folks who are going through those law tech schools who are getting some of that aspect. But right now, a lot of lawyers would not be able to defend a case that's related to data and technology in a way that's intelligible or intelligible way. They would be confused.
Yeah.
And that's sad for me because that's like the way our world is moving.
Man, that's real. So did you take the bar?
No, I did not take it because I knew I wasn't going to do it. I literally was like, I'm not doing it.
So you didn't go through that. You got your degree and was like,
the funny thing was, I was going to take the bar after I ran for office. That was the plan. And then I got my job focused on running the data organization. I'm like, I can't do it. There's no space for it. But I do plan on in the future taking a bar and then doing pro bono work like 10 years out. Not anytime soon. But yeah.
Got you. Yep. Got you. Got the whole plan set out. That's dope. Mm-hmm. So how was the law, aside from you coming to the realization that this is not you, that you don't want to practice right now,
everyone should take law classes. I love law school. I feel like everyone should be forced to.
If
we could go back, seriously, as a child, you should learn this stuff growing up because it literally changed my whole view of just life, how the system works, how it happens. I would literally recommend that everyone take a few law schools or classes, especially constitutional law to understand that, and then crim law for sure. Bare minimum, everyone should take that. Because reading some of those cases, it blew me. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I was saying, you're probably about to get into it, but what was the biggest like realization you came to while in law school learning the cases?
One was when I found out about how the land of Native Americans was taken away from them.
Man,
I
forgot the name
that
of the
case. That case messed me up as I sat there. Yep. So just for the folks who are watching who may not be lawyers, there's a rule or common law rule called first in place of first in time. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but whoever gets there first, that's your land. Mm-hmm. You come to America, technically we were on common law or on common law. So they came here and they were like, oh, the Native Americans have been here. And yes, technically, they own the land because they're here first. The case literally lays out their reasoning behind breaking their own rule.
Yes.
To take this land from people who were here first, calling them savages, saying they would not know how to use the land. Like, this is literally written out and verbatim tells you how our country was thinking about.
It was legal gymnastics, man.
It was crazy. And reading that, I'm sitting there like, so y'all broke your own okay. So that made me also think about other things, like, so then you don't believe this shit you tell everybody, because you were able to change it or argue a case that literally took land from millions of people. So That was mm-hmm. one. The other one was the case. I can't remember the name of the case, but the one with the lady, the Asian woman who shot the girl over the drink. That was another one class, that I think I cried in class when Professor Ferguson taught that one. And to hear that, like, the reasoning from the lady not getting convicted and how she was dealt with, when I know anyone else in a similar situation would have had a different outcome. It was just interesting to see how race, particularly race and issues with Black people, and that we were reading a lot of cases during that time were similar around that. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot. Yep. And like we literally sat through a class about how Black people have been screwed in the legal system. And like just sitting there reading it as a Black person in a public interest law school, that really changed my mind. It made me think about things in a very different way. Then if I even go further, like even in law school, reading about some of the laws around how literally Black people have been criminalized in this country for like years. If you just read through the cases, and it's literally like people think that we came here and we were enslaved in this country. We were not. Like Blacks were free in the were allowed to be free, and then they were enslaved later through law. Like it's like literally things that came along, and you read every time something happens, someone does something else. Before, like for example, if you were a enslaved person and your owner or whatever sexually assaulted you and you had a kid, that kid could have been free. They changed the law to say you were only free based on what your mother was, because these men wanted to have sex with these Black enslaved women. So they didn't want their kids to be free. It's like if you look at the law over years of time, and I've actually sat through some of this even deeper post university, I'm like, y'all was just out here just changing it to work for you. Yes. And it's just like it's very
whatever they want.
But for that reason, people should know the law so they know what they're up against, so they know what's happening. Because a lot of things happen in this country through public policy, which is more so on my side, more like government and what government does. Government has caused a lot of harm in this country to people of color. Let's just be honest. And then on the legal side, the legal system has also done the same thing. So that's why I do not want the future of data, tech, and these other things to continue to cause the same harms it has caused in the past.
No, that's real. And we had to sit in these classes too. It's like we weren't just like learning a subject. It was like impacting our lives. And it was currently still happening. Even in Crim Pro, like these were laws that were in place that were negatively impacting these communities. And we had to sit there and learn it as if it was like we're just learning a random subject. No, it was hard to sit through that.
And when we were school, we had we had multiple killings of Black men during that time period. And then having to sit in class where you're learning about the law that's going to get the person off who just killed someone. Bruh. Like, that was a lot.
Bro, we had to protest on Saturday and be back in class.
Literally, be back in class.
It was crazy.
I remember people going, and even with the immigration or migration crisis, people were literally going to the border, helping people.
Yeah.
Like, when the kids were literally in cages, we had people from our school going down there to help people with asylum cases and all that. Like, and having to go to work, especially if you were an evening student and also, or even not an evening student, you have to go back to school the next Monday. It was a lot.
Sheesh. Shout out to all the evening students, man. How was it being?
That's
an evening
why I
student?
Said during my grad. I spoke at my graduation. I was like,
yeah.
Special shout out to these people who are 40 plus hours and coming in here 4 nights a week.
Bro, break down the evening student struggle. Lay it out for you, for the audience.
Y'all will never understand. So one thing, we looked at y'all like y'all were pansies, and it's probably not appropriate word to use because y'all would be complaining about 15, 17 credit hours. I'm like, I got 12.
Right, and a 9 to 5, bro.
Yeah, and a 9 to 5. Literally leaving work, getting on the train, just enough time for me and my friends to grab Starbucks coffee and a biscuit and going right to class. And y'all were like, oh my God, the exam. And people and had, like, I don't have kids. People had kids, spouses, 4 years.
Multiple kids.
And y'all were crying. I'm spouses. Gonna leave that alone. Sorry.
Pets, all of it. No, that's real. My friend corrected me. I used to say part-time. She's like, we're not part-time
students.
We're
full-time student. Graduate equivalent.
We are full-time.
We had 9 plus credits, 12 credits. No.
Man, I said, a struggle.
Call me a full-time evening minus one class.
No, for real. Man, shout out to all the evening students who made it through, man.
Yes.
That's real.
Another year. No, we deserve that and a trophy.
Yo, for real.
Most valuable player.
man, give a networking gem that you use in law school?
So, I think, so I'm going to use one from life in general that I also applied in life or in law mm-hmm. school. So I learned early on, probably in my undergrad, the idea of a sweet spot. So everyone, this one, my parents are military, so I've grown up around all types of people, from red to blue, purple, fill in the middle, from all different races. Like, I've grown up around a lot of different people. And I've always had to move every couple of years. So I've had to learn very quickly to adjust to my new environment. But one of the things I learned when I was in undergrad was something called the sweet spot, which is basically everyone has one thing in common. No matter who you are in this world, no matter how much division we want to try to throw on each other and all this other crap, like, we don't literally bleed and sweat the same way. We all have one thing in common. So my thing is to find the thing that we can relate on, we can talk about. And people just love talking about things about themselves and things that we both like. So start there, which really helps. And that has helped my career out. That's helped me out in so many ways of being able to find what matters to someone else and something that we have in common. And, like, really using that to start conversations, build friendships.
Man, that's real. Great gym.
Thank
you. You found that has worked for you entirely.
I know people going to this thing today about that. Like, we were talking about getting jobs and stuff like that, because I recently just got the VP role, and I was telling them, like, this is how I made it. Like, I've been able to figure out how to build relationships with people, and it starts with that sweet spot. Even when it's someone I'm like, I don't know how to break the door. There have been times where I've been in rooms with, like, stark Republicans. Here come this black girl, especially when I wear my afro. Here come this black girl with her afro. What is she about to tell me? And I know how to, because I've been able to develop that. I know how to break that wall down, that whatever wall we all have and biases that come along that, and I'm able to get through it. Not all. If you're racist, you're racist, and we're not going to make it. But I'm just saying, in general, like, just some people grow up a certain way, live a certain lifestyle, and I find that one thing that we can relate on. And in areas where I don't feel like there's something I can find, I bring somebody in who can ally with me to relate and get me in that door. And that has worked for me.
That's dope. That's good. I was stalking your LinkedIn page to prepare for.
Clearly, I'm interview. Like, listening to your reading your bio. I was like, oh, you read.
I did my homework. You were talking about being on a sabbatical in between positions. And how you felt like everybody should take time in between positions. And that's literally the time I'm on now. Like, I'm starting a new position in January. I took all of December off to take that time.
Woo!
Why do you, and I'm so glad I did it. Cause I was about to just go straight in, and I was like, no, that don't feel right. I don't think that makes sense. Why do you feel like it's important that everybody should take a sabbatical in between positions?
The funny part is, I'm the person that goes from job to job. I'm the person that quits on a Friday, start on Monday. And it's honestly been other people telling me, even with this new job, my old boss, he's a mentor of mine. He was like, how many weeks are you taking off? And I'm like, probably three. He was like, why? He was like, like, no, you need to take longer. Even the new job, they were like, you can take longer if you need longer. Like, I guess in my mind, I've learned a lot in the last recent years around, like, just things that aren't common in certain cultures that are common in other cultures. Like, it is rare, let's be honest, for black people to take sabbatical. We don't even know what that word meant.
Man, to just rest is like take no work.
It's like, what is a sabbatical? Like, what is that? That's a thing? Oh, you can do that? Like,
only we're pastors mess up. That's all you tell me. When pastors got to sit down, that's what we do. But we don't know it as just rest.
No, not as, like, other than, like Sabbath and things like that. But we don't truly know it as, like, rest from work.
No.
And so when they were telling me, and these are people who don't look like me, who were telling me to do it, I'm like, let me just do this. I'm like, there is no reason. They're like, this may be the last time you have, like, a big gap before another role. And I was like, you're right. I said, let me just take the time. So I took 6 weeks, and I'm not the type of person that can truly rest. So I was doing a little bit of side hustling on the side, but I was doing it on my time, my schedule, how I want it. I took 2 trips. I went out to Sedona, Arizona, which was amazing.
Nice.
If you've never been, go out there with the Red Box and the Vortex. If you don't know what that is, Google it.
I'm no clue.
I don't hang
that.
In the Vortex, that sounds like animal, but it's out there. I'm just letting you know. I don't do the Vortex, but it is a thing. And then I did Miami last week, because I wanted to be in warm temperatures, getting plenty of sun rays so I can get ready for this next position. But it just really reminded me of, one, life is short and we spend too much time on the grind and not truly resting and just, like, enjoying life, right? And I had also been listening to some audiobooks, like 4-Hour Workweek and stuff like that, where they're, like, reminding you, like, there's ways to, like, take many time periods, many retirements, as they call it, in between your whole career versus waiting to your 60X when you're literally probably out of shape, not trying to do too much. And in doing that, but how do you truly add rest into your life? So I just really feel that that's something we need to do more often. Also, before that, I had taken a 2-week vacation at my last job. And I was like, oh no, we're doing 2 weeks every year. Like, so it's certain things that I'm like, I never did it because one, I was trying to be a good worker, trying to like commit myself and you're killing yourself. Everyone needs 2 weeks off, which is technically 3 weekends. Everyone needs to take time off during roles, not go from Friday to Monday. Even if you can't do weeks like I did, even a couple of weeks or half a week so you don't miss a whole paycheck, being able to set yourself up that way is very important.
That's so real. This is your sign, y'all. Take that break. Because even going into my break when I put my time in, it felt weird. I felt like I was leaving my company high and dry. I was like, oh, is you sure this is okay? And it was like, first of all, they don't care. Which is the first realization, and it sounds harsh, but I was like, no, that's a good thing because you don't have to feel this pressure of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to mess up this company. No, you're going to be fine. And honestly, the best thing I've ever done because you get time, like you said, rest, learn about yourself, know what your next goal is, and go into your next position very refreshed.
Yeah.
What would you feel like is the one thing you learned about yourself during your sabbatical?
I don't like meetings. I wrote that on LinkedIn. No, because I came out of I started my other job during COVID. What that meant is you were on Zoom, at least we were on Zoom, sometimes 8 to 5, 8 to 5:30 all day long. And I was a director and then eventually got promoted to senior director where I was literally in back-to-back meetings all day long. I'm like, this isn't reality. And I hate that we push towards virtual meetings to the point where someone sent a phone number, we didn't know what to do with it. Like it was... Because it was like, you're not used to phone calls. So it was like, where's the Zoom link? She was like, no, let's do a phone call. I'm like, oh, shoot. That used to be a thing. But now we're sitting here staring at people all day. That is draining as hell. No, I'm being serious. Because you're like, they already showed you. Most people are looking at themselves to make sure they don't look crazy. You're overthinking things. You're not paying attention to what's happening in the room. Like, it's creating a lot of mental stress versus picking up the phone and saying, hey, John, I need this or this is this. And we're done. We're sitting here in meetings for an hour because they're booked for an hour. So you feel like you can't end them in 15 minutes. I'm like, this is dumb. So what I realized is, and the funny thing is I had took a workshop about this a long time ago where a lady was like, the only reason you meet is to actually get something done. If it's an update, do it in an email, send a voice note or something else. Do not have meetings for, because it becomes this long thing. And if you have a meeting, schedule them for 15 minutes because 15 minutes is all you need to get whatever you need to get done in that segment. So I really realized how much I hate meetings because I was taking meetings here and there. And now I'm really like, nah, we got to figure something else out.
Man, that's real. And I feel like we've all been in those meetings where it's like, this makes no sense.
And that's most meetings. Like, think about the number of meetings that you actually need. It's probably 20% of your calendar.
Yeah. Or no, I agree. I definitely agree.
So I learned that. The other thing, let me get one thing that's not as tactical. The other thing I learned is that, how can I say without saying? Is that people need to understand their values and what matters to them. And I think being away from everything else gives you a chance to figure that out. Because I think oftentimes the 9-to-5 grind piles so much on you. You don't have time to be creative. You don't have time to think. You're literally reacting. And having that time allows you to recalibrate to figure out what matters to you and what is important to you. Because many times someone is telling you what matters to you and what is important to you. And you're not necessarily having time to think about it because your boss is telling you, I need you to do this or I need this or these are the goals. And it's like, do you really want to do that? Is that what your life, what you want to spend your life doing? A lot of times that revelation happens either when some chaos happens, like COVID, a lot of people left their jobs because something disruption happens. And I think a sabbatical gives you a mini disruption or even 2 weeks off gives you a mini disruption to be able to make sure you're aligned with who you want to be in this limited time we have on earth.
Right. Don't wait for something bad to happen for you to have that revelation.
Like if take you can the control, time, plan the time.
Right.
Some people recommend, right. I think someone said once every quarter, you should be doing long weekends, taking that time to make sure that you have the space to do that. So you're not getting stuck in that cycle. Because I know people right now who are thinking about career changes and they're 40 and that sucks. Like that's hard. And a lot of it's because they've been stuck in the 9-to-5, 9-to-6 grind and not able to look up. And now they're looking up because of all the craziness that's happened around COVID. And they're like, shoot, I'm doing something I do not want to do the next 20 years or 15 years.
Yeah. That's real. And don't feel guilty about it. Like one of my friends, she's taking the bar in February and she was asking like for some advice because she's studying in Africa right now. She's in Africa studying for the bar.
Good for her.
And I was like, she was like, what's some advice you guys want to give? I was like, take your breaks and enjoy the motherland and don't feel guilty about it. Like emphasis on not feeling guilty. Cause you could take the break and then the whole time you're just stressing like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. Then you just messed up the whole time that you just took. Like take your breaks and do not feel guilty. I know it's hard to do it, but as much as you can, clear your mind, clear your head, understand that they're going to be fine without you.
They will.
You're important, but you're not that important.
None of us
over
are.
Over yourself. You are.
Unless you're the one person fine. That can do the neuro surgery that no one else can do in the world. We ain't that important.
Unless you Dr. Strange before the car accident.
Later or late.
You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Take your break.
I tell people that all the time. I'm like, we are not working in the ER. No matter how much your boss is telling you, this is not that important. If you die tomorrow, your position will be posted in 3 weeks.
Replaced.
And they will send your family flowers. Because I've been in environments that have literally sent family flowers who coworkers have died and that position was posted. And the world kept moving. Please excuse yourself over anything else.
Man, that's real. I think the best thing you can take away from this podcast is that, Jim.
Literally.
Speaking of creative, you have your own podcast. On the podcast front, like how is it having a podcast just from just doing a podcast?
What is it? I like it because I like interviewing people and meeting new people. That's the part I love. Like right now, what I don't like is I need to hire a editor because I have a million episodes that need to go up and I'm anal because I don't want I don't want any of that in my podcast. Like I don't care about stuff. Like I tell people, like I just start posting video. But when it comes to the audio, I'm like, I'm anal in all the the spacing.
The umsy.
I'm like, no, we're not doing this. So I probably should just let it go and just post as it is and just call it because that would actually take off more stress. But I love interviewing people and hearing about people's journeys. Like you were saying, I talk about data, technology, public policy, law. The thing I love about the podcast is we break stuff down in like plain language. So if someone wants to know what Bitcoin is, like I'll talk about what that means or what blockchain is, like technology related topics or law related issues and things that happen. Like we've talked about cases involving police shootings with unarmed black men. Like I did did one on that. So we talk about different topics and break down the law or break down the technology, break down the policy that's associated with it in a plain way. Because my goal is that people will hear it and be like, oh, I'm interested in that. Let me go see how I can get in this. So I always ask people like a cadence of the same questions. And one of the cadences or questions is like, how does someone who is interested in this get involved? Because that's what I really want to get out of it. Because I want more people who are looking at these spaces. And then folks also to kind of say, oh, I understand that enough to have a conversation about it or enough to Google it to learn more if I'm really interested in that topic.
Man, that's so good. And that's also the goal of this podcast, too. I mean, that's why I'm glad you're on here, too, because I want more people of color to see people in the law and to see people in different intersections of the law.
Because on my LinkedIn.
You said what?
I said, you are doing that because on my LinkedIn, literally, yours always pop up and I always see. It's really cool to see black people who are in law popping up on the screen. So great job.
For real. Because when it comes to the podcast content space, like you said, the movement of social media and algorithms and stuff like that, when it comes to law and the different aspects of it, you don't see people of color in these spaces.
Mm-mm.
And that's a reason why I created a podcast. And that's why I love that you had that podcast, because they see people, they hear the podcast, they see the content and say, oh, that person looks like me. And like you said, I'm now interested in what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. I want to enter that field.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're just going to go for what they see on TV or what they hear about lawyers and different people like that. I'm like, I don't want to touch that. And we make up 5% of this profession.
Which is crazy
to me. So if we're able to provide content, like you said, Gen Z is on social media.
Yeah.
They're listening to podcasts. They're on TikTok. They're on Instagram. They're seeing this content. If they see black faces saying, this is the area of law I'm in. I'm in tech, in the intersection of tech and the law. I love it. I enjoy it. This is how we make changes. Yada, yada, yada. They're going to go, oh, shoot, I want to do that too. And that's how things change. That's how people move into these spaces. And we're no longer going to be the 5%.
I agree.
Or you're no longer going to be in meetings that you could only see one person that looks like you.
Every.
Or you're the only person of color. So I'm that's so awesome that you're doing that.
Real life example. Actually, one of my former colleagues, actually, we had lunch a couple weeks ago. And he literally told me, hey, I actually signed up for this AI master's because I heard your podcast. And I'm sitting, and he's a Hispanic, young Hispanic man, and from Ecuador. So, like, born and raised in Ecuador, came over here to Florida when he was like 15 or 16. But literally, listened to his podcast, he's now signed up and actually got accepted into a pretty good AI master's program. So, like,
going
to be able to get into that because of your podcast. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Didn't know that was happening. So good to know. And people text me all the time and they're like, oh, I finally understand blockchain, or I finally know what you're talking about with Web3. And I'm like, great. That's all I want. Just for people to understand the basic of it so that they can have conversations. Because back to what I was saying earlier, in the places of like Web3, we're left behind already. Like, black folks are not in, let me just break this down real quick. There was a Web 1.0, which is like the original internet, which is basically like going on websites, reading things. Web 2.0 is interactive internet, which is basically like Facebook's buying stuff and all that. Web 3.0 is a decentralized web, which is basically everyone can own their own data. You can own your own access. This is where the metaverse is going to live. This is where things like NFTs and all those words, blockchain, all that stuff is in the Web 3 space. But we're not in it. So if they're building worlds and economies in Web 3, and building, like, there's lawyers, some lawyers are getting into Web3 and building practices in the metaverse. Like, that is a real thing where people are building virtual practices. There are literally people working today in the metaverse and different metaverses where they're like virtual assistants. Someone's just telling me their friend's kid makes a bunch of money being a virtual assistant in like Roblox or some mess. So it's like, so there's things that are happening, and sadly our demographic isn't involved in that. Like, the good thing is I'm connected with a lot of people who are black, but also it's a very small percentage within a very small percentage of people who are paying attention. And if we're building virtual worlds and we're not even building there, and we're still struggling here, like, there's so much that could happen in the virtual world where people get access to jobs, industry, selling products. Like, so much stuff is happening that I'm nervous about for people who are already disenfranchised. But sorry,
that's crazy.
And another conversation.
No, it's real good. That's all good, because even back to your campaign when we were out getting signatures, where we were getting signatures at were people lining up to get computers during the pandemic. There was parents lining up to get computers from like the library because they didn't have computers for their children to go to school.
Board building,
and the entire line was black people. It was black people. So,
and it was hundreds.
It was wrapped around the block, and that was also the saddest part to see. It was like if these kids can't even have laptops, talk about the metaverse. It's such a huge gap
exactly
to even catch up in that space. It's insane. That was heartbreaking to
I'm
me.
Glad you said that. And that line, for more context, that line was multiple days for multiple weeks. So that line was out there for multiple days, multiple weeks, and people did not have laptops or tablets for their kids to even do school. The school had to lend kids these devices. And back to what you're saying,
had to stand up in the hot sun
and literally wait out
hours
and then literally for hours to get a laptop. And then we expect that same kid to be able to compete with a kid who has a parent who can afford a computer, who has the ability to get them in the courses they need. So that scares me too. That's part back to the future of work, back to skills, back to making sure our young people, like, there are a lot of programs in Baltimore that do focus on coding and helping kids. And I don't think everyone has to be a coder. You can do something totally different. But everyone, I'm going to say this to lawyers and everyone listening, everyone needs to understand the intersection between their job and technology, period. Whatever that is, you need to figure that out, and you need to figure it out soon, because that is there's not going to be a place where you can succeed without technology. And COVID again showed us which industries were very vulnerable during that time, and folks need to figure out what their intersection is and how technology can enhance what they're doing and keep them sustaining beyond this moment, because it's only going to get worse. with more integrated systems, with more smart technology, with automated autonomous driving, with the stuff that Tesla's doing, with the stuff that all these other companies are doing, with cars driving themselves, like all this stuff is only going to get worse. So bare minimum, people need to understand how they're going to keep their job and be relevant in a world that jobs are soon going to be gone for. Things that can be repeated over and over again that don't need a lot of thinking, those jobs will not exist in the next 20 years.
Man. And it'll definitely just put you ahead of the game too.
Yeah.
Just to get on it now. Like, you'll be more acquired because you have this specific skill or you know more knowledge of this tech space. It'll put you ahead of the game.
And that's why I think intersections are so important, and why that's why I'm in mind. And when someone said that, I'm like, yeah, because those worlds don't talk. So figure out where your intersection is, how you can make yourself stand out in your little niche. Find your niche, because niches make money. find your niche, and someone's going to need the support or need whatever that you're offering. But you got to find it, and not when it's too late. Like, it's too late in 10 years.
Sheesh, that's crazy. Sorry. Well, I think that's the perfect way to lead into my final question or segment of the conversation show. Mm-hmm. I end with a closing argument. I know you probably haven't done one since clinic.
Let's go.
I don't know if you took mock trial or not, but it's basically you did take mock trial?
Yeah, I did. I think I had to.
Okay.
Excuse me. Evening students had to take the same course as y'all did. I think I had to take it during a day, though. It was something weird.
Nah, it was an elective. Nah, mock trial was like a
oh, then I took it then. I don't know why I took it.
Okay. Got you. So you good. You got this.
I don't know, like, though. That was probably 3L year. We'll see. Go ahead. 2018. Yeah. That's a long
time ago. So it's basically a closing argument. You're leaving the audience with something. You kind of just did it, but you leave the audience with a word of encouragement or whatever you want to leave the conversate audience with before you leave. And the caveat is you have to use the word of the day. And the word of the day is fulminate.
What is that word? Google. Help me, Jesus.
You can't Google.
What is the word?
Fulminate.
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 Nah, you're going to have to tell me what this means. You're not about to play me on national television. Sorry.
National television?
Yes. This is
Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
It's national television.
That's the whole point. I can't tell you what it means.
What? So can I look it up?
No, you can't. Fulminate. Just use it to the best.
Use root words. Hold on.
Use it.
Are you going to tell me what it means afterwards?
I will tell you what it means.
Is it a legal word?
It is not a legal word.
Okay. Fulminate. All right.
Yeah. Try your best.
I got
your hardest.
I'm going to make it what I think it is.
All right, let's do this.
All right. I'm so stressed. This is wrong. This is cool, though. I appreciate it. Dang, you want to pick some word that it's not even an
SAT. It's going to be hard. It can't be an easy word.
It's not an SAT word. I'm moving on. Maybe it's an SAT word. I haven't taken an SAT in like 20 years.
Right, exactly. It could be.
Okay, so let me think what I think it means. All right. So one thing I do want to leave with your audience is, you're doing God's work, or whoever you believe in work, because being a lawyer is not easy. We need lawyers. We need people who are out there fighting for people on the ground and keep doing the work. The one thing that I do want to say to people who want to be lawyers or who are lawyers is that you got to figure out the future and how that's applying because it's happening too quick. Let's just rewind to 2008. iPhone came out, I think, in 2008 or 2009. That's not that long ago. Look at where we are right now. In the next 10 years, it's only going quicker. It's only speeding up. The next 10 years, most people who are listening are still going to be in their 30s or early 40s. And that is scary if you're not keeping up with that. So please make sure you're staying at least a little bit abreast of what's happening in the tech space, in the future space, because I don't want people to have these beautiful skills and then they're not able to compete, because there are lawyers who are getting trained, who are competing at certain law schools. Top law schools are training their students on these things. So I do want to say that. The other piece for folks who are just generally listening, I believe everyone can be marketable. I think that it's going to be harder to market yourself in the future. So back to what I said earlier, find your niche. What is the thing? And they actually have a word for it. I was actually talking to someone. Your zone of genius. You can Google that. But find the area where only you can do and you do it better than everyone else and put all your energy behind your zone of genius, because that's where the money resides. And that's where you're able to literally build out whatever it is you want to do and find a space. For me, I think I found mine. So I'm able to go and work for places that I never imagined I would have worked for. I never imagined seeing myself as a VP anywhere, honestly, to be completely honest. I didn't see myself as a senior director in my last role, or director, and all the different roles I've had. But because I was able to find my zone of genius and like learn that space and be a voice in that space, it's truly helped me and guided me in my way. And it's allowed me to fulminate my career and ensure that I was completely a whole package, a whole person when it comes to what I want to do in my future. With that being said, that is my gym. What does the word mean? What does the word mean?
Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, amazing. Fulminate means, so it's two definitions. Either one, express vehement protest, or literally explode violently or flash like lightning. So you use it correctly.
It could work. Yeah, it could work.
Yeah, you exploded your career.
All right.
Yeah, it blew it up.
Raise the roof, 1992.
Now you killed it. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you. I really appreciate the podcast, time.
Man. This was amazing. This was fun. And I know the people are going to learn a lot. And they're going to be in that tech space. They're going to be Googling a whole lot after this
Let's
podcast.
Do it. And also, feel free to hit me up. I'm around, so hit me
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. And follow the AI System Decoded podcast, and I'll be linking it in the bio, and I'll be posting it on the social media. So please follow and listen, because those are also great gems on there. I just listened to the wearable tech one that you posted. It was like the second episode. But great stuff on there. So please
the audio
follow.
Gets better after episode 4.
We learning this podcasting. It's a learning curve. Like,
it is
a lot of stuff I'm still learning about podcasting too, that I need to get better. Just it's all good. So I understand. So thank you so much.
No problem. Anytime.
That is a wrap for the AI Decodes the System podcast. I really hope you enjoyed the conversation with today's guest. Please make sure you go to wherever you listen to this podcast and download, subscribe, like. Make sure you show us that love so we can know that you are loving the content we're putting out. Also, feel free to add a comment and rate us. Thank you all so much, and see you next time.